the new book, Trump on the Couch, is a deep dive into the mental and emotional state of President Trump, written by New York Times bestselling author and clinical professor of psychiatry at George Washington University, Dr. Justin Frank. Dr. Frank says no president in the history of the United States has inspired more alarm and confusion than Donald Trump, and his questions and concerns about his decisions, behavior, and qualifications for office have multiplied. They point to one primary question: does Trump pose a genuine threat to our country? Again, the name of the book is Trump on the Couch, and we welcome Dr. Justin Frank to the roundtable this morning. Dr. Frank, you make the point in the book that ultimately it all begins with the mother.
Okay, it all begins with the mother and Trump's near loss of his mother, who almost died following the birth of Donald's younger brother. And so he had a lack of strong maternal force growing up. And so it had a lasting effect on his character. I was really interested in how he's so comfortable at taking things from other people, even from his own family. And that got me interested in trying to understand how he got to be that way and what that involves. And I'm a psychoanalyst, so I was interested in getting at the root of why he does what he does and why he tweets the way he does. And I learned to describe him. I'm not doing a diagnosis, but I'm describing him. But that's what led to the book. And I was very curious also about how he had such a hold on so many people and what this source of that kind of power and comfort was, his kind of charismatic quality. One other thing I felt was that he gave people a voice, and I was struck by that, that he reminded me of road rage, except in public. It's not anonymous.
Yeah. When you think about someone in your position, and I mean, obviously it's difficult to talk about the mental state of somebody without having them in front of you, is it not?
Right. Yes, it's very hard.
So how do you make up for that?
I make up for it by reading everything I can about what he's produced, studying his tweets, watching his press conferences, reading things that are written about him, looking at my own reactions to him. So I have much more information than I would about one of my own patients, because I only know about my patients from what they tell me in my consulting room. So it's a very different kind of experience. It's called applied psychoanalysis, where I apply psychoanalytic ideas, which I use in my consulting room, to understanding him and his behavior and looking for patterns, looking for certain things he does, looking for speech patterns, looking for various behavior characteristics that become part of his character, and that I can really then begin to piece together who he is and how he got to be that way. And I feel it provides a tool for people who read the book to really have a way of thinking about him, even if they're very much in favor of him, because it helps people. People often don't know how much they do know, and I think that this book is also trying to affirm that we know a lot more than we think we do.
Let's talk a little bit about his parenting. You talked about it at the beginning of
yes,
our conversation. But the impact of his mother and father, and as you say, it all begins with the mother.
It all begins with the mother. And in his case, he was the fourth of five children. He was the first born after World War II. So they have a special place, even if they're the fourth child. There was something in America about people being born in 1946 that meant a lot to families, even if the father wasn't in the war. But be that as it may, his mother was very enamored of the British royalty, and she spent a lot of time thinking about it, not being at home when he was a little bit older. But when he was two, she disappeared from his life briefly because she had another child, which was the last child, Robert. But when she was in the hospital, she had a severe hemorrhage and almost died. She had to have four surgeries to save her. And so she was suddenly an absent mother. And so I think that he never developed a strong maternal force in his life that's had a profound effect on him. And we can see it now where he doesn't show much empathy, when he mocks other people, when he disregards women's boundaries physically. And I think that a lot of that has to do with not having been contained as a child, which mothers usually do. They help children manage their fears and anxieties. And instead, he just expressed them and got them out. As for his father was a bit of a tyrant and ran a real tight ship at home. And in that sense, he was afraid of his father, but he also appreciated his father's strength and power, and he felt he could identify with that as he was growing up.
There is an interesting portion in the book about lying, and you talk about what compels a person to tell a lie.
Yeah.
I'm interested in this. I mean, most humans don't have the Washington Post counting how many lies they tell.
Right.
But the President of the United States does. So the number is high, right? By any standard, that's a high number.
Yes.
Okay. So what leads to that type of behavior?
Well, the first thing that leads to it is to manage anxiety. That when a person is anxious, they may tell themselves a lie so they don't have to think about what's making them anxious. It's a way of calming themselves down. And so over time, he developed a series of lies that he would tell himself. He's the strongest. He's the best. He can do this. He can do that. And a lot of those were compensatory as a way of developing what I would call an ideal self to protect himself from his father so he could be safe and powerful. So anything that was critical was seen as fake news. Anything that attacked his self would be seen as fake. So lying was a way of reassuring himself and avoiding or evading, really, having to face truth about himself, which was that he needed people, that he hurt people, that he was smaller than, I mean, he was a big kid, but he was, you know, still a kid. And so he developed a kind of grandiose sense of himself and bragged about his accomplishments over and over again. And so that's why people lie and why he compulsively lies. We all tell lies to ourselves. We all look in the mirror and sometimes see somebody who looks younger than we are or and weighs less or more than we all do. There's lots of ways we tell little lies to ourselves and to others. But Trump, it's really a compulsive need all the time. The other reason people lie, like him, is that they have trouble reading and learning in school. So they have to compensate for it by being more powerful, more knowing, more knowledgeable, when actually they don't know that much.
When it comes to the lying, I guess it seems that we probably should have talked about this earlier, but you would call him a narcissist?
Yes.
Does lying go with that? And then ultimately, what would the diagnosis be as to the level of his narcissism?
Well, the level, there's two kinds. First of all, let's say lying does go with narcissism because one lies to oneself. One thinks one is more beautiful, more smart, more loved, able to do things without feeling guilt, able to say things without guilt, grandiose, as it will. And so people who are narcissistic are very well protected by their lies from feeling anxious or inferior. But narcissism is born out of insecurity. It's born out of rejection. It's born from hurt. So when somebody doesn't pay attention to you, over time, you may develop a compensatory self-love, which is narcissism. If your mother's not going to love you or not be there, or your father is whatever, you develop a kind of narcissism that's pathological. Everybody has some narcissism because it is related to self-respect. But Trump's is quite grand. What makes his narcissism dangerous is that there's a malevolent quality. He really hates other people having anything that he doesn't. So he constantly has to tear things down. He has to break down institutions. He has to attack rules and regulations because his father set rules and regulations. So he has to say, I'm the one who can make America great again. as opposed to what Reagan said in his slogan in 1980, which was, "Let's make America great again." He invited other people into the process, as opposed to saying, "I am making America great again." So that's his narcissism and his grandiosity, and it is powerful.
Well, let me ask you, as a clinical professor of psychiatry, there's much been made about Rod Rosenstein wearing a wire, perhaps taping the president in a way of invoking the 25th Amendment. My question is tinged with some sarcasm, which is there anything that could possibly have come out of that taping session, if it were to have happened, that was different from what we saw, which was an 81-minute ramble, right? I mean, I don't know how else to put it.
I would say there would be nothing different. I would be surprised if there was anything different except some kind of direct expression of contempt, if it was there, I don't know, for his own supporters. Sometimes people like that actually hate their own followers. And that might have been something that could be there, but that's entirely speculative on my part. I've just seen that with some people who can't wait to get away from their adoring crowd, if you will. He doesn't seem to be like that, so I don't know that he would ever say those things. So, yes, that press conference was him in the raw. He was belligerent. He was circumstantial. He would come back to the topic some of the time, but he also would talk over people who asked questions. Everything was self-referential. He never showed any empathy towards the women who have tried to come forward about Judge Kavanaugh. And I think that we would not have learned anything new. That's a great question about what would have happened if he had, if Rosenstein had actually worn a wire. I don't think we would have learned anything different about him.
Right.
He's very grandiose. He's very exaggerates his own power and himself because he has this desperate need to be loved. He has this desperate need to fill some kind of gap that is in his unconscious of having felt betrayed as a kid and not safe from his father. Parents usually protect the child from one another sometimes. You know, when the mother's out of line, the father will protect. Or when the father's out of line, the mother will stand up and protect, hopefully. That's why it's always good to have two parents if you can.
So the big $64,000 question, Doctor, is the man fit to be president of the United States?
He is not. And the reason he is not is because of the things we've already talked about. Plus, he's thin-skinned. Plus, he's impulsive. Plus, he has a destructive part of himself. He has a very difficult time experiencing empathy for other people. And one of the things that a president has to do, and I think all presidents except for him have done to some degree or other, is they try to protect, to make the public feel safe from safer than they felt without a president. And Trump makes people feel less safe. I think that his impulsive behavior in his speech is not functioning as a containing function that a president should have. And that's because he never had that as a kid. Nobody could ever contain him. And so he doesn't know what containing is about. He really doesn't, and he can't do it. So the other reason he's unfit is that in order to manage, he always has to have an enemy. He always has to have somebody to fight against. So it's either the press, it's Little Rocket Man, it's whatever it is. But he divides people to maintain his power. So he divides an ideal self from a destructive self. And he keeps them very separate. And I think that's why he sees the world as full of deceitful people, destructive persecutors, all those things.
The name of the book is Trump on the Couch, Inside the Mind of the President. The book is by Dr. Justin Frank, published by Avery. Dr. Frank, thank you very much for sharing with us. A pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you.
Again, the name of the book is Trump on the Couch, Inside the Mind of the President. It's published by Avery. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.